morning, everybody. Thanks for joining me this morning on Minding Your Health, the show that helps you find ways to take back control in issues regarding your physical and mental health. I'm Roberta Fernandez, a board-certified hypnotist, an NLP master practitioner, and a certified instructor at the Fair Hypnosis Center here in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I help use hypnosis to help people succeed where nothing else has worked. And I'm really glad to be here with you every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on AM 950. Today, we're going to continue our discussion of performance improvement, but with a very specific focus. It's that time of the year in Minnesota when the courses are green again and the weather's perfect for being outside. So today, we're talking about golf. And I want to welcome a really special guest. John Weir is a colleague. He's another hypnotist who lives in Florida. He's the author of The Golfer's Guide to Mental Fitness, How to Train Your Mind and Achieve Your Goals Using Self-Hypnosis and Visualization. And you can find that on Amazon.com. John is a mental performance coach at the renowned Mike Bender Golf Academy in Lake Mary, Florida. That's right near Orlando. He is also an award-winning board-certified hypnotist with the National Guild, including being the youngest person in their 66-year history to be inducted into something called the Order of the Braid, which is their highest honor. And, John, I'd like to say I could have been the youngest, but that ship sailed a long time ago. So John would have to kill you if he told you who, but he's worked with some of the best golfers in the world. And welcome, John.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm really excited to have you too. John, just to kind of get you up to speed and our listeners, the past two shows we've been talking about the importance of connection and belonging in the workplace and in community, and the importance of performance improvement in our personal lives and in the workplace. And all of these things are really important to our overall mental and physical health. Now, John, I've taken your course. And I've studied your recordings. And as a fellow hypnotist, I see the connection. But some of my listening audience may be wondering, what does performance improvement, especially golf, have to do with mental and physical health? Do you want to chime in with a perspective there?
Well, you know, as everybody says, that golf is primarily a mental game. Because if you look at the way the performance breaks down on a golf course, an average tour pro is going to have about 44 shots around a golf, about 40 to 44, and it takes a second, 1.2 seconds to actually execute a golf swing. So when you actually break that down, we have about 1 minute of performance swinging the club, and we have about 4 to 5 hours of processing things mentally. And it's very much a mind-body game. Now, if you're looking at just your everyday golfer, I mean, you talked about being connected. Golf is such a wonderful way to really get connected with nature, get out in the environment, really get in harmony in that regard, connecting with friends in a really healthy, positive environment, and just simply getting out there to move your body, learn how to control some of your impulses. And I especially like the European way of playing golf, which is no golf carts. So you actually get a really nice stroll through,
you gotta walk
the landscape and things. So
yeah.
In that regard, it's just a wonderful way of synchronizing your mind and body to perform and also just bring your life back into balance.
Absolutely. And you're right. I remember this quote from Bobby Jones that said golf is a game that's played on a 5-inch course, the distance between your ears. And I think that that is so true for golfers. I know I see a lot of golfers in my practice as well, especially this time of the year. So let's start our discussion about hypnosis and its role in professional golf, and then we'll kind of take that down to the weekend warrior kind of golfer. I know that you were originally from Pennsylvania, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you started doing so much work with golfers. You moved to the mecca of golf, right? Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida. So I know you work with a lot of pros. Let's chat a little bit about that.
Well, you know, hypnosis plays a big role in what we're doing. I mean, there's some things that we do on the course as far as mental strategies and things, but off the course, I mean, hypnosis is a very extensive tool that the majority of my players from junior level all the way up to the tour level are utilizing. And some of its major role is, one, is really helping a player to develop a self-image to match their goals. So I think it's very, very important that we have that self-image in mind that's congruent with the level of play that we want to go and do. And recently I had a player graduate onto the LPGA Tour, and working on right now, developing the self-image of realizing that we're one of the best in the world and that she has the capabilities to perform at the highest level and on the biggest stage. So we do a lot of work there because it's easier when we're doing self-hypnosis or hypnosis as a way to cultivate that image and be able to get the mind to accept a new self-image. We also use it to eliminate a lot of the negative belief systems and incorporate new ones that are going to create more success. We work on eliminating some of that emotional scar tissue or mental scar tissue, if you will, from poor performances or times where we gave it away right coming down the stretch. And then it's also used a lot for your mental rehearsal of your golf swing as far as for developing your golf swing and also for working through scenarios about your tournament preparation. So these are just some of the ways that we utilize hypnosis to help people get on track and perform better.
Yeah, and the reality is that lots of professional athletes use hypnosis in one form or another. Some of them call it something different. They might say guided visualization or whatever. But a lot of this is a form of self-hypnosis. And it's really interesting as I listen to you talk, I can golf, let's put it that way. A lot of golfers are very happy that I don't. I'm one of those ones you don't want to be behind because I'm doing a lot more than 44 strokes, throughout the course. But, I listen to what you're saying, and these are the same things I do with any clients that come in for any reason, not just golf, because it is about looking at what our belief system is in general about ourselves and the words that we say to ourselves, those conversations that we have. And one of the things I'd like to touch on as we kind of make the transition to from professionals to the weekend warrior golfers is remembering why you're out there. Because one of the things that I run into, John, is that, your average golfer out there that's just loving the game that is coming in because obviously they want to improve their skills, they forget that they're not the professional and yet they expect they're very hard on themselves, right? So why are you out on that course? Is it to enjoy nature? Is it to have that camaraderie with your buddies or your friends? And keeping that in mind, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, keeping the expectations in check is a vital thing for the weekend warrior. The pros on TV make it look so easy. It's hours and years of mastery going into the game. So when we keep our expectations in check and we do get aligned with our reasons for going out to play, if we can keep enjoyment at the forefront, then we typically play a lot better. The body is a lot looser. We have a lot more fluid action with our golf swing. But then we're not paying to be stressed out on the golf course. I always remind it to our average players, it's like you're paying to be there.
Right.
There's other places you're going to have stress. So you might as well go out there and find a way to enjoy the game. And absolutely agree 100% with you.
Yeah, because a lot of guys get out. Although I would say this is not prevalent among women, but that is not necessarily the truth always. But guys tend to have the reputation of being very, very competitive. And I know I'm getting ready to sponsor a hole on a local golf tournament here next month. And I've done this before, and it's a lot of fun as a hypnotist, but, some of these guys are really, really competitive, and it's just about fun, and they kind of lose that perspective. So I think remembering why you're on the course to begin with is really, really important.
Absolutely. It's easy to get caught up in score and a lot of those things, but ironically, your average player who's enjoying the process of competing and having fun with the friends actually becomes a much more competitive player. So it's actually a route to be able to perform better.
Yeah, and I remember one of the first things that you taught me a couple of years ago was, the club is just an extension of your arm. And so everything that you're feeling in your body is being translated into that club. And so when you are stressed, when you are nervous or whatever it is, or angry because of how you screwed up the last shot, that's just going to keep translating down into that club.
Absolutely. And, the one mistake that I see a lot of the weekend warriors make is going back to your initial question about the professionals is they're using their mental rehearsal in such a negative way. So the brain isn't discerning the difference between a positive or negative type of mental rehearsal. It's assuming that it's the goal. So we often have a lot of those weekend warriors that hit a bad shot, and then we're replaying, or they come off the course and they think about their score or the last few shots. And if this is a negative experience, they're adding emotion into it, increasing their memory, and then they end up rehearsing their failures or their struggles, which in turn starts to perpetuate that more and more. And so by learning how a weekend warrior can benefit big time by learning to be more on the credit side and giving themselves credit for the positive things, because it's going to link it in the memory better, and learning how to get rid of the critic. And that's such an important skill. And especially for the weekend warrior, I mean, if you're not out there practicing a lot or you're not getting a lot of time on the course, keeping your expectations in check and keep reinforcing the positives that are going on is a vital skill. But I just always see it in the opposite direction. They rehearse the putts that they missed, or they rehearse their bad swings. They get on those first tee, and they're speculating about all the things that could be going wrong. And as a result, their brain begins to produce more and more of that. So I would encourage even the weekend warrior that your mental rehearsal is vitally important. It's something within our power. And even if we're not hitting the ball particularly well, or we're having a little bit of a struggle, we don't do ourselves any service by keep reinforcing the bad swings. We got to get in line with what we want to get accomplished, the reasons we're out there, and start using the brain in a productive way for themselves. And that would be one thing I'd have them take a look at.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I want to pick up on that when we come back from the commercial break. We're here with John Weir, a fellow hypnotist from the Orlando area, Florida, and we're talking about improving your golf game. So when we come back, John is going to share a lot more tips. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and this is Minding Your Health. Today, we are talking about a subject that's very popular this time of the year. We're talking with John Weir, a fellow hypnotist from the Orlando area in Florida, about improving your golf game. John, when we left off, we were talking about that self-talk. And I'm always telling my clients that the brain can't tell the difference between what's real and what we vividly imagine. And so when we tell ourselves something, it thinks it is the truth, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, self-talk is important, obviously. And one thing that I tell a lot of my players about that, which many don't know, the U.S. Navy SEALs have four criteria for mental toughness. One of them is mental rehearsal. They get trained to rehearse success. And number two, which kind of surprised me, was control of self-talk. And when that's up there with the U.S. Navy SEALs, I mean, hell's happening on Earth, and these are the guys running into it to take care of business. They had number two on the list for control of self-talk.
Wow.
And it's so vitally important, because it's not so much the words that we use per se, at least on the golf course or in life, but it's the mental images that are being generated in the brain.
Right.
And these mental images, as far as golf performance goes, are really directing the brain and the body on what we're going to be producing and what the goals are in the brain. So when we're using a lot of negative connotations in our language, and or we're speaking what we don't want to do, we tend to produce more of it due to the nature of the brain, the pictures coming up.
Right.
So self-talk is the easy thing to correct. We can change words. You know, I use the one like hope and no. You never want to go to a mechanic's and they put some brakes on your car and they say, you know, we never put these on this type of model car before. We hope you stop at the stop sign. Well, we did it right. And I'd be terrified to leave that mechanic. So we can choose our words. And by choosing and making good word choices, we generate different pictures. And believe it or not, we get different levels of performance.
Absolutely. And I like what you said about the image part, because a picture truly is worth a thousand words. You know, that's the old saying. And I find in hypnosis, it's really true. And everybody can visualize in hypnosis. And so it's really important that we have those beautiful mental images. So let's talk about hypnosis. I know one of the things you and I had chatted about before the show was how it's often misunderstood due to media portrayals. I know there's a movie out that just came out recently about hypnosis and is very negative and it's kind of ridiculous, but that's the way they all are, right? So let's talk about what it really is and how it's used in sports.
Well, I have a different understanding of what I believe hypnosis is, and I outlined a lot of that in the book. I don't believe that hypnosis is a state of mind. Mm-hmm. I think hypnosis is more in line with a communication process that has the purpose of being able to access learning states and to accelerate learning. If you look at on an EEG that's measuring brainwave activity, states of hypnosis when people are in that process or they're doing deep meditation or even prayer, or even just taking a stroll through a garden real relaxed, we notice that the same brainwaves are active and in use. So for me, what I look at is hypnosis is a way of communicating to a person to relax the brain and get them back in line with their learning states. And a lot of these things are validated in science. We have four predominant brain waves, and when we're children, our brains are resonating mostly in an alpha and theta waves, and that's when we're able to absorb information and accept it and process things quickly.
Exactly.
As we become more mature adults, our brains are resonating more in beta, which is designed to access critical analysis and logic and reasoning. And so we don't have that same absorbing of material. So for me, hypnosis is a way of one, slowing down the brain, communicating positive messages in a state that's congruent with learning.
I really, really like that. You know, I just finished up a few weeks ago a whole segment on parenting where we talked about that exact same thing, that your children under seven are always in that learning phase, that because that's when the brain is developing and it needs to take in everything that it can. And that can come with some real negative consequences too, because that subconscious mind is so literal and children don't have context because they're too young.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a really, really, really good point. So in sports, what are you trying to do with hypnosis with an athlete?
Well, like I said, there's a lot of different phases. We're using hypnosis to, one, develop the person, because in this game, it's a lot about character and mental toughness and developing the belief systems to be able to go and achieve the goals. And then we also do a lot of work in performance settings. So we're using hypnosis sometimes as a way to break down any negative conditioning. Let's say a player is struggling with their putter, and oftentimes they're feeling really good, and they go and reach for their putter, and it's immediately accessing and reinforcing some negative states in them. So we end up getting into a slump, and they use their bad self-talk, and they keep reinforcing the slump. So hypnosis is a fast tool to be able to break through some of those old barriers and get back on track. And then we also use it for conditioning patterns of success into players, triggering relaxation responses, triggering certain imagery to come into mind over the ball, and also for tools to be using in between shots to kind of keep ourselves in a state that we're going to be conducive for success.
Right. And John, one of the things that you talk about a lot is, you know, that peak performance state. What do you think kills that, and how do you address that with players?
The killer of peak performance can be summed up in one word, and it's called stress. And stress has varying levels, obviously, but what's interesting is at a basic level, what stress does to a person and a player, and I think stress is a little bit different than having some pressure in a competitive setting. I mean, a lot of athletes thrive under pressure. When I'm talking more about stress, it's where we have anxiety or we have fear going on. At the basic level, stress will affect the player with the three T's. It changes their thoughts, it changes their tension levels in their body, and it changes the tempo of their golf swing. At a deeper level, what stress is doing, it's literally shifting your brain. So when we're going into stress states, the fight or flight is being response goes off in our brain, and there's literally a shift in what parts of our brain are being used. So we shift from using our cerebral cortex, left and right hemisphere, down more into our limbic system, which is really responsible for a lot of our emotions and fear states. And when that happens, there's a suppression of the motor cortex in the brain. And that motor cortex is responsible for your synchronistic muscle movements, your coordination, all the fine motor programs that go into executing a golf swing. So the deeper we go into stress, the more that part of our brain gets inhibited. So we lose the fine motor programs, and it goes into the fight or flight type of way we use our body, which is going to be gross muscle movements. So we're going to get more bulky, and we're going to have our shoulders getting more involved in our golf swing. And also a lot of those hormones that are being released into the brain, like norepinephrine, which is going to increase tension, all these things are going to be inhibiting a player's performance. And the way we address it is we actually developed a program called Mental Golf Type. And there are 16 different types of brains out there in the golf game. And everybody has a predictable pattern that they go into when they get stressed. So our goal is to show people what their natural gifts and strengths are based on their mental hardwiring and also their pattern of stress. Because it's such an automatic response, people have to learn what that is so they can break that spell. So as you start becoming more aware of it and we train them based on their own brain how to get out of it and get back to their gifts, they're able to recognize and correct this automatic response, which really plagues a lot of golfers.
That's awesome information, John. So we're going to pick that back up when we come back, and we're going to talk about how players can use performance triggers and really just improve their game. John, this is a great conversation. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. This is Roberta Fernandez, and you're listening to Minding Your Health here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're talking with John Weir today, a hypnotist from the Orlando area of Florida who works with a lot of professional golfers, and we're talking about improving your golf game. So, John, when we left, we were talking about a lot of really interesting things and about how our brain works. So let's talk about performance triggers and helping golfers stay in this heightened state of awareness and focus.
Sounds good. Going back to one of the things I brought up earlier about the length of time of actual performance, I mean, it's very minimal when you look at the amount of time you spend on the golf course. So one of the very first things that we do for a mental trigger for a lot of our players is teaching them how to turn on and off focus. Mm-hmm. And a lot of sports psychologists call this shifting from broad and narrow. Jack Nicklaus related it to kind of an accordion. So whenever he was getting ready to prepare for a shot, he would bring the accordion in his mind and narrow his focus down to the task. And then after the shot, he would broaden the accordion and let his brain begin to relax to prepare for the next one. So one of the things that we like to do is we have our players begin imagining a performance bubble around the ball, which would be about, you know, within about 10 yards or so like that from their ball. So as they're walking up there, they're going to be doing a trigger, maybe like a double snap or a certain thing that they pick that's right for them to basically tell the brain it's time to get now task-related focus.
Right.
And then after the shot, I think one of the biggest things that plagues at least a lot of the weekend warriors and even professionals is the ability to turn off that focus so we're not grinding mentally and processing tons of stuff after the shot. So again, you could be doing that double snap or when the club goes back into the bag, create a unique trigger as a way of signaling to the brain, you know, it's time to chill out.
Right.
And hypnosis is very effective in making that a powerful tool. But it's amazing just doing like a double snap how much that can change it. And we like to joke, there was an old commercial, it was the clapper, and you'd clap on, clap off, the clapper.
I'm sure
a lot of the listeners have saw that. And that's essentially what we want to do out there, at least as far as being able to manage our mental energy. So broadening the focus after a shot, connecting with your friends, connecting with nature, kind of going within just to kind of be at peace. It's a powerful skill for performance. So that's one of the triggers that we teach players to do.
Very cool. And I know one of the things that I remember from your training, we talked a lot about having a pre-shot routine. And I think that that is really important. And it's kind of part of the process that you're talking about now. That pre-shot routine kind of sets you up to get you into that heightened state of focus. You know, now it's time to be serious. But why is that mm-hmm. so important for golfers?
Well, we actually call it more of a shot process because mm-hmm. what you're doing pre-shot, during the shot, and post-shot are all encompassed into a process.
Yep.
And it's very important because subconsciously we thrive off habits and we can actually bring consistency into that aspect of the game. We play golf in a variable environment. There's changing variables every day. So you could be out in the morning and on the back nine, the entire course conditions can change on you. So we have to bring something that's consistent as a way to increase our focus and to give ourselves a comfort zone to be able to rely on. We often relate it to like a comfort blanket, and that's your process. And the way that we kind of establish that is I came up with an idea calling it like a traffic light, and we have three main zones of our routine. Red zone starts the process, and we put the red at first because if you go blowing through a red light in your car, chances are it's not going to turn out very well. We might get lucky every once in a while,
right?
But typically the results can be very dangerous. And our red zone on the golf course is the decision-making area.
Right.
And I watch players all the time. They just laser a flag, they grab that club, and they go through it without actually creating a strategy. So we want them to get to the red zone at their ball and stop, assess the situation, taking in their lie, what the lie is going to do, how it's going to influence the flight, the distances, the trajectories that they want. And that's where we're going to be doing our starting the process of visualization and locking down on our targets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important because like we were talking about earlier is that mental image has to set the tone. So if we skip that mental image and we go right into rehearsal, those rehearsal swings are essentially useless. So
yeah.
We start at red, make our decision, then we transition into yellow. Yellow is preparation. So now we're making a mind-body connection, or you could think of it like a visualization process, where we're holding the mental image, and now we're connecting it with the feel that we need in our swing to execute. And starting with that image makes it easier for the body to translate that picture and connect with it to get committed. And then obviously green zone is going to be at address, and green means go.
Mm-hmm.
And so many players would benefit if they would have a shot clock, believe it or not, over the ball. So many times I see people just sitting over the ball and them dwelling and dwelling and dwelling. And I'm thinking, what could they be thinking over the ball that's going to help them perform at that state?
They're overthinking, right?
That's part of the problem.
Yeah, right.
So Mike Bender just wrote a nice book called Golf's 8-Second Secret. And that's our shot clock. So by the time we set in to address the ball, our players get trained to be able to access their target, create a relaxation response, and then execute with it, get to a balanced finish within 8 seconds. And so if you're working this routine in this process properly, that 8 seconds is easy, and you find that knowing that you have that time frame to perform in increases performance tremendously. And that was based off a lot of research with multiple major winners. And that was one of the correlations between the best in the world at the highest level. That was one of the things that was consistent with all their routines.
Yeah, and I think there is really something to be said. I mean, it gets into that overthinking stage. You know, your body mm-hmm. already knows what to do. If you've been out practicing enough, your body knows the swing. It knows its job, and it's our mind then that can get in the way. So I think that's a really cool idea to set a time limit. And I like the way you explain that. I know one of the things that I remember, because it has been a few years since I took your training, but it was one of the things that stood out to me when we talk about visualizing I know you'll know what I'm talking about here. You almost did a reverse image where you're looking at the shot and you're planning your strategy, already seeing your ball in the hole and coming back towards you in that flight pattern. You remember what I'm talking about, John?
Yes, and some players are good with that full shot, but we always do that putting.
Yes.
So with the putting mm-hmm. over the ball, our last visualization is actually a reverse visualization.
Yeah, I
really. And the reason
that.
For that is because the science and all the research shows that when we have a positive, successful sequence of seeing the ball roll into the hole on our line and dropping, a player can improve their accuracy up to 20-some percent, or 28%, 29%.
Mm-hmm.
Where negative depiction of that is going to decrease a player's baseline accuracy by close to the same number. So what I found was a lot of players end up going up, and we're still visualizing forward as we're seeing our line and we're making our decision initially. But what players do if they're having a hard time putting is they may see it short and they put bad things. Their target becomes, okay, don't leave this one short, or let's roll it to the hole. Or they're not actually connecting the ball into the hole. So when a putter is getting ready, they made the decision, they've rehearsed their stroke, and they step up to the ball, we have them incorporate that reverse visualizing with their breathing. So they breathe in, connect with the hole. They're imagining the ball sitting down in the bottom, it rolling up over their entry point. Mm-hmm. And as they exhale, they're visualizing that line back to their ball, finishing their breath there, and then giving it a roll. And what we're ensuring there is that the ball, we're generating that positive outcome image that we're looking for. And we're training it with the relaxation response. And from there, it's a lot easier to sink more putts.
Yeah, so let's talk about that relaxation response. Explain to our listeners what you mean by that.
Well, one of the things that the research shows is that the ball striker's best putters in golf, and this was also in a lot of other skill sports like archery or marksmanship, they all are showing a relaxation response a few seconds right before performance. So the relaxation response is actually triggered through our breathing. And it's a 1-to-2 ratio. So every breath has a cycle, a two-part cycle. We have an activating part as we breathe in, bringing in all the oxygen, activating our brain, stimulating all the body. And then there's a relaxation part of the breath, which is actually the exhale. So if you're breathing with a 1-to-2 type of ratio where we're having a slow, controlled exhale through the mouth and doubling the time we've inhaled, we're triggering a relaxation response in our brain. So over the ball, if we're doing that as the last thing, it's actually an off switch in our brain. So as we focus on the breath, the brain goes at peace, and that relaxation response shows that the brain's coming into balance. Mm-hmm. And it opens up this performance window for a player to be able to execute with optimal focus. So we train a lot with the breathing, especially as the last thing before we execute. And the key is the exhale. So if we're having that slow, controlled exhale, we're actually using our biology to trick our brain, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the key with the breath, though, is it's really interesting. I mean, your body sends two signals to your brain oftentimes with your breathing. I'm in danger, or I'm stressed, or mm-hmm. I'm relaxed.
Right.
So if you think about how you breathe, if you got scared, and you breathe up, and it's in your chest, and it feels upward.
Right.
That's a stress breath. Mm-hmm. And a lot of players end up getting over the ball, and they breathe upward, and they hold it. And for the listeners, if they did that through their nose and they hold it, you'll feel tension in your stress or your chest, your shoulders, your neck. But when we're relaxed, it's a different direction with our breath. It's a downward feeling. So if you were to sigh right now, you feel it going down. And as we feel a long, controlled exhale going down the body to our toes or down to the ball, your body is sending a different signal to your brain, which is, I'm relaxed and I'm comfortable. And so we often hear about commitment and trust and over the ball. And it's such an intangible idea. So we relate it to that if we can finish our shot process or our pre-shot process with that breath going down, our brain's triggering to go off for a second, which is optimizing our performance. Mm-hmm. But that's really a way of saying, I'm committed and I'm trusting what I'm doing. And if players would start working on that breath routine, they'd be amazed what their body does, and they'll be amazed at the clarity that they have over the ball.
You know, I want to thank you because one of the first things I teach all my potential clients, even when they come into my office, is about the importance of the breath and teach them how to breathe because it is important in every aspect of our life. It is the organic way our bodies come back into homeostasis. We shut down that fight or flight, turn off the stressors, and turn on those chemicals that help keep us calm and feeling good. And it's amazing when I talk to people about breathing, how many of them roll their eyes like, oh, gosh, you know, mm-hmm. this is what I'm paying
well,
for.
Well, we get that, too.
Yeah, I bet you do.
There's a training aid that we use, which is the focus band on their head. So the focus band will show whether the brain's going optimal focus states or if the brain is active. So whenever they go and they put their breath to the test and our avatar on our app is going red, they start becoming a lot more curious. And then they start learning how to manipulate their breath to be able to trigger that response inside of them. And the other interesting thing about that for everybody listening is your breath is in your respiratory system is the only system in your body that is both conscious or subconscious.
Right.
So it's our bridge to get into our subconscious mind, and that's what we want to do when we're over the ball activating those motor programs and getting into a state of peace.
Great. John, when we come back from commercial, we're going to pick up on this again. Welcome back, everybody. We're here in our final segment with John Weir. He's a mind coach for golfers. He works out of the Orlando, Florida area. And John has got some great programs out there. I encourage all of you listeners. He'll give information on his website when he comes back. Or you can come in and see me. That'd be awesome, too. John, so we've really talked a lot about some great things. In our last segment, what's some of the biggest mistakes that you see golfers making, and what can they do to rectify some of those things?
Well, there's a lot of mistakes that we see out there every day. But if we're looking at our average player out there, I'd say the number one mistake mentally that they're making is inappropriate expectations, kind of what we had spoke before.
Yeah.
So a lot of players are going out expecting to hit everything really good. But they don't realize that, you know, the bulk of tour players make their money on about five events. And then they're going to have, 5 weeks that they're going to be completely awful. And so sometimes we have to understand where we're at in our process and kind of lower the expectations from perfection. I mean, Ben Hogan, who has, revolutionized the golf swing, was only expecting ever to hit shots to his standard of perfection, maybe two or three a round. Mm-hmm. But you get these average guys or the young players going out there, and they want to see everything perfect. And so this really gets into the way of their success, their enjoyment, and really being able to tap into some of their potential. Mm-hmm. So what I like players to do, especially your weekend warriors, I'd adopt what Walter Hagen was doing, which is have a shot allowance. You know, he had eight shots that he gave himself every round that could be, bad shots. And I believe Walter won 11 majors in his career. And so for an average player, I'd say, put that at 10 or 12. And if you hit a poor shot, just say, okay, it's one of my allowance. And work on suspending some of that frustration until you use up your whole allowance. And if you can implement something like that, we can start lowering some of those expectations to appropriate level, and we keep a lot of frustrations out of the game.
Yeah, it's really true. And I think that frustration level, I mean, it can translate in so many ways. I had a gentleman in the office a couple of months ago we worked with. He'd been golfing for a long time, and he developed the yips. And I'm sure you know what that is. But for our listeners that mm-hmm. don't, it really, I think, all relates to stress. But it was affecting his putting game, especially like 15-footers. He just couldn't make them. And, he would get these muscle spasms in his arms. And it got so bad that he went to the doctor. And the doctor tried to tell him he had a neurological condition. So by the time he came to see me, he was pretty depressed about mm-hmm. the state of things. And, it was really so simple to rectify that condition. And when he came back in a week later for his next appointment, he'd gone out to the putting to the range, and he had 45 15-footers in a row that he made. And never
wow.
once. Yeah. And, it's so funny because part of that, too, I think, is and I tell golfers this all the time. Do you make these same mistakes when you're practicing? And they'll say, no. I was great on the putting range. I'm practicing before all week. My practice shots were great. And then they get out into a game on the real course, and they fall apart. But this all goes mm-hmm. back to what we're talking about, doesn't it? Just staying relaxed, remembering that it is supposed to be fun. And what you did in practice, you can do. There's no difference, right? Except in our heads.
Sure. But the one thing I would add to that is players go from a practice range with no consequence to a course that does have consequences.
Yes.
And so I would encourage players to add in consequences and pressure into the practice.
Oh, that's a great
advice. So
we've got
to train our players by making our practice environments a lot more difficult and demanding than what the actual course will provide for them. So they get used to handling the consequence and the pressure, and it gives them a much more likelihood of being able to go out and produce what they see in practice.
Excellent, excellent. So, John, if you were to give your top two or three best tips, what would they be?
Well, how about I just sum it up into a simple strategy that helped teams win national championships and players win a lot of events? And it's kind of a core strategy for approaching the game. And what we want to do is we want to hit on our three P's. And the first P is positive. Looking at things with using positive self-talk in your targeting and also with your mental and emotional state as far as how you communicate to yourself. Mm-hmm. Patient is the second one. Learning to stay patient and keep giving yourself opportunities, staying a lot more in the moment with what you're doing, and just playing our shots. And the final is going to be focus on our process. So if we can keep those three P's at the forefront of our mind and work on winning in those departments on the golf course, you're going to be amazed at how that translates to lower scores. And you give yourself a rating at the end of the day. You know, where was I at positive? Where was I at with my patience level? And where was I at with my process? And if you can get that up over 8 or 9 to 10, man, you're going to start seeing a really good performance improvement on the course.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, John. And I'll go back to what I said earlier in the show. This is the same advice I would give a client that came to me for just about any reason, whether it's improving their golf game or any sport, because the techniques and the little things are different from sport to sport. But the process is still the same. The idea of being positive and keeping your mental game there is important. But it's that way in life too, isn't it? No matter what.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no matter what issue, the advice really isn't that much different. Technique is another thing. But yeah, it is the same for whatever problem comes in. Our mental frame of mind and goes back to our belief system, what we've been told, what we've experienced, whether it's on the course or in life, it all connects, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the beauty of golf is, you know, it's one game out there that is almost completely synonymous with life. Mm-hmm. You can do a good job and catch a bad break. We catch lucky times sometimes. The course gives us sometimes and it takes away. But we learn about ourselves. It's a beautiful way of learning and discovering yourself, understanding how to control your impulses and really lead a successful, happy life.
It really
it's
is
really
true.
A wonderful and awesome game.
Yeah, I love that analogy. That's great, John. So, John, how do our listeners find you?
You can go to my website. It's mentalgolfacademy.com. Or you can look me up at mikebender.com. We have some information there as well.
Excellent. John, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on our show and taking time out of your busy calendar to join us. I know all the Minnesota golfers that are listening are thanking you, and I can guarantee you they're looking you up. John has some great programs that are available, and I recommend it to everybody. So thanks for joining me. I'm Roberta Fernandez at the Fair Hypnosis Center. You can reach me at fairhypnosis.com. That's F-A-R-E hypnosis.com or at 952-934-1315. And I'd like you to join us next week here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, where I'm going to be helping you take back control. We're going to be discussing magnetic therapy. And actually, this is probably something I could have brought up with John here, because I know a lot of golfers subscribe to that. My guest will be Leanne Lyon of Avivo Pure, and she's going to be talking about the power of magnets and our health. Have a mindful week, everybody.